Hi there, this is writer-director J.R. Bookwalter, and we're here today to do the Dead Next Door commentary. And seated to my left is...
Michael Todd. I play Jason, Andy Van Driver, and I was an assistant director and an associate producer and storyboard artist and did stunts and special makeup effects, too, on this movie.
Whoa.
How about that? And to my right is...
Mike Chalosko, also known as the Prince of Darkness.
and you were?
I was the DP, tried to be the DP, and I was also Randall.
Cinematographer, for those of you who...
Cinematographer, yes, and more importantly, Randall.
That's right, the actor as well. We are all three in this movie, sadly. So here we start the film with, this is the basement of the Bow House, as we call it. That's Maria Markovich, and... Lester Clark, who unfortunately is no longer with us. He died a couple years ago in a car accident. And you guys now have nothing to say.
Well, yeah, well, I got something. I'm waiting for the big dramatic entrance of one of the best characters
in
the movie.
Well, of course.
Like the audience at home, I'm waiting with bated breath.
I've always been stunned with montage. Speechless.
Well, I guess everybody knows this goes back. Here, wait.
Hello.
There's the big entrance.
Who is that good-looking young man?
Got to wait till that comes in.
What was like 12 years old there?
That's a good look, though.
Well, it was 1986, so we did hire a lot of underage children, yes. So it's possible.
And the two men with me are...
Oh, look, there's Gaffer Joe in the background there.
Tony Redrick and John Deering, actually.
Yeah, that wasn't Gaffer Joe.
Oh, that wasn't.
We'll see Gaffer Joe later chewing on a tire.
That's right.
And also in the behind the scenes.
And also playing a character as well.
Does he?
Here's some
Joe Sattel?
Oh, no, Joe Sattel does not. He just chews the tire. You're right. Here comes our first big attempt at the gore effect, which is a little too dark, but
we even had a little piece of bone in there and everything that doesn't read, but it was...
We shot that a couple of times, I think.
Many times.
Yeah.
And we did tests of it and everything. There was like a while there. But
that's right. And this is our new cleaned up title sequence.
I like the logo. I always like the logo.
Which I had nothing to do with. I'm ashamed to say. There's Michael Todd.
There I am walking in. And my mother is in this scene also.
Ah, that's right.
Wow.
Joe Spud Scuduto.
Jeffrey Spud. Jeffrey W. Spud Scuduto.
Wow, yeah.
And there was your mother. Your mother's shoulder was in there, right?
Yeah, she has a... There's a better shot of the back of her head there.
That's right.
And then a good friend of mine, Jamie Downey, who always laughs at my mom's acting when she runs out of the store.
Well, everybody looks a little goofy. It's fun.
My roommate doesn't...
Well, she's running for her life, so, you know. What are you supposed to do? This is, I mean, as if you can't tell that it's going to be a cheesy horror movie, that scene ought to show it. That actually was written later, after we had shot most of the rest of the movie, and I just wanted to have something to bridge into the rest of the main title sequence, which is what you're watching now.
There's the whiskey bottle.
Product placement.
It was product placement, and we got a case or two from the makers of that particular brand of whiskey. And JR gave some to various crew people, and I still have mine. I haven't opened it. I've had it for 20 years, and I always told myself I'd open it when something good happens.
I still have a bag of the bloody popcorn.
So after today, you're going to open it.
Well, I had another story. Yeah, usually I can't have a bottle of liquor around me unopened for 20 seconds. So for 20 years, it's...
That's really something.
Scott P. Plummer, our one of the producers.
That's right. That's my mother's front yard in winter, actually, that shot was. And here's a shot that always looked like crap in the original versions of the movie. Now you can actually kind of see what's going
on. The camera did miss Kelly's stunt there. It kind of looks neat. It kind of looks neat how
it
kind of
just flies into frame there, but... This was the day we closed off Main Street in downtown Akron, Ohio. We paid for the police to be at both ends. And there's so much going on in this scene. It's impossible that, you know, there's our two wardrobe girls. And that's David Barton's old car, I remember.
The Rambler, right?
Yeah, that's right. We set this whole day up. And then this is shot much later. This is my actual... girlfriend at the time, ex-wife, who also worked on this film. She was the script supervisor and office secretary, Tina. And this was up the street from our my old office.
There's Gaffer Joe Sattel, who later went on to be a director of photography on a movie that I wrote.
And that zombie was David Barton, and that zombie's Bill Morrison. And, I mean, there's just a lot of the cast and crew is in here, as well as many extras. And there's Mike's big DP credit.
Oh, boy.
And this is actually, this A&W scene is one of the few things that was salvaged from our first 2 weeks of the shoot. where the footage came back too dark and had to be reshot. But,
this is like the only stuff I wasn't there for, I think.
Really?
Yeah, I wasn't there for that A&W, I don't know.
Huh.
But this is our big day. We had like three different crew. We had one at this, was it a school?
Yeah, this is Springfield
High
School.
People at Derby Downs and people by the blimp hanger there.
The money shot.
Yeah.
The money shot.
Line everybody up and shoot at that location while they were lining up at the other location.
And that aerial shot, there were like 300 extras there, but it almost doesn't look like 300 people. But
yeah.
Here's another shot, greatly improved from the new transfer.
Oh, yeah.
Because you could never, and they look like night in the original transfer. Now you can actually see zombies walking around back there that you couldn't see before. And
the clouds in the sky.
And the clouds in the sky. this is part of the problem. When we first did this movie, we shot this film, and it was sent out to out here to California to be telecineed, and it wasn't supervised. So sometimes they would just assume things were supposed to be night, and they weren't, and it's crazy. There's one of the earliest puppet heads that David Barton created for the film.
It's like the first day I walked in the office, that thing was sitting there, and I was like, whoa, this is going to be a cool movie.
And boy, were you wrong.
And 20 years later, I can finally see that.
I always like this shot, too, on top of the car.
Well, I like this on top of the car shot, and then I like this crane shot.
Oh, the crane, baby.
Hey, you were just saying, you were asking if the crane was used, and there indeed it was. Maybe we didn't use it as much as we should.
And then
there's a dolly shot.
Wow. Three interesting shots in a row.
And then the rest of the movie, there's none. So it blew our wad early in the process. So here's we're introducing the zombie
205. Any reason why the number was 205?
Because, actually, it's ironic. That was my apartment in college.
No, wait.
Number
205. Now.
And now it's my apartment here, too, which it was not planned, but it's kind of strange. There's Floyd Ewing Jr., played Captain Klein.
Jolie.
And this was actually another sequence that was reshot twice. There's some footage in the outtakes on the DVD you'll see of the original farmhouse location.
Did we shoot it at this farmhouse the first time?
No, it was a different one. It was in Stowe, Ohio the first time, and I'm not sure how we found that property, but I guess they wouldn't let us go back. Probably got blood on the carpet or something. So.
Probably.
I always love Scott's acting. He always played it kind of a little campy.
Well, I mean, it is campy.
Yeah. I remember him, too, with some lighting tips from Mr. Scott Spiegel, especially when we got the dark footage. He took me off to the side and said, look, this is what you need to do. And
he showed you how to use a light meter.
Yeah, he showed me how to set a light, too.
He's like, look, you better get your crap together. Well, in your defense, it wasn't so much anything you did. It was the camera was broken, essentially. So it had to be sent to be repaired.
It was, but he did help with little lighting tidbits like the backlight and the key light
the
and the
light.
Still light.
Sure. Here was our 12-year-old production assistant, James L. Edwards, who's since gone on to act in a number of other films that I've done. And this sequence was pretty much shot in its entirety originally on John Kilo and a number of other people had built this really elaborate set in the office that we had. And this was built originally with these stark white walls, which I kind of like the idea of that because when the head gets cut off, it would spray blood everywhere. But when we got the footage back, the wall was perfectly exposed and everything else in front of it was pitch black. It was like everybody was in the silhouette.
But it looks more real this way.
This is a much better set. So basically what happened is we had torn the set down.
Right.
By the time we realized that we had to reshoot it, and then, of course, we had to rebuild the set and redress it. And
the grenade going in his mouth here, this was my idea, the way to do it. That was the prop grenade was a heavy piece of metal.
This was a potato grenade, wasn't it?
Right, and I said, get a potato and sculpt it. And Telesco, you made that, I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
Did you sculpt
it? I made that grenade, yes.
And years later on another set, I needed a knife handle.
There's a little
nice.
CG improvement that we did. The explosion looked really bad, and I never liked it. So
nice. As a matter of fact, I make that every Easter.
You make the potato
grenades for everybody.
I was on another set, and somebody had to fight with a knife strapped to their leg, and they didn't want to because they thought, you know, what if the knife might stab me? So I said, to the makeup effects guys, make
it out of potato.
A potato on the handle of the knife. Put that in the knife holder, and
so what you're saying is potatoes have it's multi.
Yeah, kids out there, if you're making your movies and you need props, just pull them out of potatoes.
Get a bag of potatoes. Well, I'm sure the state of Idaho would be happy to hear that.
I remember
this looks a lot better. Yeah. I watched this last night, an old VHS copy, and this cleaned up version, you can actually see their faces.
Yeah, I've been looking at this for a while now. This remastering's been going on for a year, and you guys are just getting your first peek at it, so it's...
I remember the tree outside the windows there, too, the branch.
Yeah, it was actually somebody painted that as a backdrop, and I wish I could remember who that was. But
it might have been me. I think I remember painting that.
Well, there's a picture of somebody working on it, a girl that whose name escapes me, but I'm sure she has a credit in the end, but I think you were probably in there.
Now, here is the very first time, you'll see it later in the movie, where a zombie squad member just isn't paying attention.
There's a lot of that in this movie, though. All these characters are just not very bright.
Yeah. Oops.
Like I told him. And oh, I love that.
That
I love it.
Always gets some sort of reaction from people.
John Kilo was also doing storyboards when I came on. That's what I started doing, drawing storyboards. And that was one of the storyboards I saw, was that head with the finger coming out.
The storyboards was a very nice thing to have, too.
Except we never used them.
Well, we didn't use them, but I looked at them.
Well, it's just good.
It would give you an idea of what you were up against.
I'm glad, because I spent so many hours drawing storyboards.
No, it is. I
remember the storyboards. I loved them. God, loved them.
Thank you.
They weren't on the set as much as they should have been, but... But it is good to sort of to convey to other people what you're looking at or how you want to do this. I mean, the funny thing about this movie that I looked, when I was putting this footage together, is I did this. The horrible thing for the actors is you know, everything was shot in little tiny pieces, which is not the way you make a movie. But I didn't know any better. None of us knew any better 20 years ago. So, you know, I would shoot, we would say, okay, we'd set up the shot, roll camera, slate it, whatever. I'd say action, and somebody would turn and go, what? And then I'd say, cut.
Right.
And then we'd do it again. And then we'd set up another shot to do... I mean, I had it all... to my credit, I guess, I did have it at least all mapped out exactly all these shots I wanted to have in my head. The way it basically was pre-edited in my head.
Right. And the script was written that way, too.
Yeah, it was. You're right.
The script was written... It would describe each shot.
That's right.
What? And then cut to another shot.
Which I learned a valuable lesson.
Now, he's sweating there. You see Scott Spiegel sweating, but he was sweating... That wasn't fake.
Oh, no, that was for real. You remember how hot that was?
Oh, I remember that.
And it was like 90 degrees outside.
If you look at the behind-the-scenes video, you see everybody's in shorts and just, you know, it was not pleasant working environment.
We're about to see, I guess they've already seen the movie if they're listening.
We should hope.
Oh, I remember digging the hole for that. The explosion. We sent James Lonnie Edwards up to do it because...
We had a trampoline, too, right?
Yeah.
But the hole the explosion was in... was actually on the property next door to where we were shooting, and those people didn't want us digging a hole in their property and everything.
Which means that's where all the zombies were.
Yeah,
too.
So we sent James Lonnie Edwards for that deck. I said, dig us a hole 4 feet deep. This is Scott Plum, the producer, who later became my brother-in-law.
And this field is basically right behind the Bauhaus. It's the same property.
Right.
Right to the left of the screen right now is where the Bauhaus was.
Kind of an Indiana Jones thing here. Going
Yeah, total.
And it looks like he's going to run right into the tree, but he doesn't.
Misses narrowly averts running into the audience. There, if you see a little bit of that haloing in the sky above, we could not get rid of that. That's mildew damage from some of the film being improperly stored.
I thought the actors were all saints.
It looks like there should be word balloons. But, so we weren't able to do anything about that. So just got to put up with it.
Now, there's a nice dark shot again.
Yeah, Super 8's a tricky format to shoot. It really is. I mean, especially with these old cameras. We had these old chin-on cameras. I mean, they were consumer-level cameras. They weren't, you know, professional.
That's me.
Right. That's you in my mother's front yard. In the winter, if you look closely, there's snow back
there. Okay, here we go. Here's an example of the Washington, D.C. story.
Well, I've told it too many times, so somebody else gets to say it.
Come on, Todd.
Well, I'll tell it, Mike. You can embellish. We jump in these cars and we go to Washington. We're just going to go there, steal some shots, and drive back. So we get to, like, the White House.
No, we forgot to tell us it was a 20-hour ride, too.
it was 24 hours from start to finish.
Oh, start to finish.
We left. It's like an 8-hour drive, but yeah.
And so we got crew people that are in zombie makeup to be the zombies, and they... I'm in a van driving. I drop everybody off. I'm supposed to go in this little circle and come back and pick everybody up.
You drop us off at the White House gate.
The White House gate. So So I drive around this little circle once. I come back, and either Michael Klotschko or JR was waving me on, like, you know, well, we still need time. And they're crawling. I see these people crawling on the gates, and I'm like, oh, this isn't going to be good. So I go around again, and by the time I get three quarters of the way around, and it's just cops. Because they come out of trees, CIA, they've got dogs and everything, and they're like, stop the vehicle. And I did. Oh, we'll just break that up. You're going to see JR beating me up here in one
moment. That's right. You see, remember that. That's very good.
Yeah. I'll be just wearing kind of a baseball hat and glasses so you can't recognize me, I guess.
Right. We fly in front of the camera.
I remember those posters making all those stupid things. Hey!
That's very funny.
And I actually always liked the little subplot about the people protecting zombies, because crazy people would do that.
You know, that's what I thought too.
Hey, there we go.
It's funny because the executive producer of this film thought that was a terrible idea and thought I should take it out.
Uh-huh.
And
that's the cameraman, Bob.
There you go. Well, that's the whole crew, the sound and the two people to the writer, the sound recordist, Cameron and Ken Ingersoll. So yeah, you guys got your moment in the sun there, even though I redubbed your voice.
Thank you.
If you weren't around, well, no, don't thank me. I didn't want
to
do it.
Oh, but back to Washington, D.C. real quickly. So then we're arrested pretty much, and then we're taken, and this woman gives us a third degree about how these are national monuments, not movie sets, and we just better get the heck out of town or we're going to jail. And I'm, yes, ma'am.
Well, we didn't actually get arrested.
Well, we
none of us had criminal records.
No, the police took us to this.
Scott had a student ID from Akron University, University of Akron, and that's what got us off the hook.
Yes, and
actually, we had to go see the lady at the film office who I had corresponded with months earlier, or probably a year earlier, who basically said, you know, this is how much it's going to cost, and under no circumstances can you have anybody on the White House fence. So I just said, we can't afford this, and I've got to have people on the White House fence.
I was told the show was going to be them walking up to the White House fence, and when I drive around the first time, I see them climbing on it. That's when I knew it can't be good.
All I heard was White House fence.
So, so we get the third degree. You're going to be put in jail and all this stuff, and then so they let us go, and it's like, okay, let's go get some more shots now at the Lincoln Monument.
The thing is, when I had to face that woman. She actually gave us permission. She said, look, go shoot whatever you got to do, but don't bother anybody.
Oh,
like,
did she?
She actually gave us a little slip of paper that somehow said we could do this, but we weren't allowed to close off anything. We weren't allowed to touch any national monuments like you were talking about. We couldn't actually, you know, but we were able to at least get a handful of other shots for that sequence, so...
By the way, I hated acting in this movie.
You look uncomfortable.
I never liked it, but you forced me in there.
Well, aren't you glad that you are, though?
Yeah, but don't you remember how many takes when we go inside?
Yeah, but, you know.
Oh!
That's an effect that looks much better in the new version. It was too dark to really see much in the old version.
Well, do you think they would have worked out a way by now to get him out of the back?
Well, the other thing, too, is I don't think they would be... this movie, it's supposed to take place in the present, but let's say it's 20 years ago when we shot it. You know, they're driving around in a 1975 Ford... station wagon.
Well, when the zombies attacked the Earth, there was no new autos being
made. I guess not.
John Kilo made that hat, I remember.
Actually, I thought you did.
Kilo's handwriting.
But you pretty much did a lot of art department stuff, didn't you, Tulashka?
I did a lot. Kilo did a lot.
Well, that's the funny thing. Everybody had their titles, but that doesn't really say much because everybody did.
Did we have an official art department?
Well, John Kilo was the production designer.
Yeah, here we go.
For all intents and purposes.
This... took forever to shoot. We shot it like 25 times.
There were, I think, I can't remember the exact number, but it was at least, there were definitely over 20 takes of this shot right here.
Well, yeah, I got a quick story for you. I was in About Schmidt. I did a little cameo
part. That's right, you did.
And when I went to do it, and the director said, you want to be in it? You're just going to be over there taking trash out. No big deal. I went over there, and as he called take 8, I started thinking about this, and I was like, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? And I don't know. I freeze when the camera's going.
But and you probably didn't get any more money for that, did you?
No, and it took like 10 takes, and he was pissed at me. Anyway.
It's very funny. Now, this character that's leaving now is played by Joe Wedlake, who was one of the stunt guys and also a dolly grip. His name, Dr. Savini, and the fact that a lot of people have asked me over the years, did you name him that because you don't like Tom Savini? And the answer is no. In fact, Tom Savini was originally supposed to play this part. I doubt he remembers that. And I don't know. Maybe nobody remembers that.
I remember that.
He had agreed to do it, and then he got the effects gig on Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2, and he couldn't do it, I believe is what it was. It may have been another gig. So anyways, early on, Tom Savini had agreed to play that. So for whatever. There's a piece of trivia for you.
And Bill Morrison did his own makeup on this.
Yes, it was, I think, the designed by... actually, no, maybe it was designed by him. I was thinking it was designed by David
Parker. But he applied it.
Yeah.
He was in the... And he had this big bottle of 355 medical adhesive, which they don't use anymore.
Yeah, there's probably a good reason for that.
Well, I'm sure there is, but I know the makeup effects guys loved it. But and then he knocked over the whole bottle, and it cost a lot then when you were able to buy it. So now the thing would be worth more than gold. And yeah, but it was like a $70 bottle then, and he knocked it over in the back, but it spilled all over the floor, so he had, I don't know what he used as adhesive.
And he probably went, oh, man. Yeah. Bill was famous for, oh, man.
Now, is this the long tracking
this
shot?
This is the long tracking shot.
Gosh, I remember.
And all I have to say is I have no idea what I was thinking in designing this shot. I had no business even attempting such a shot. Because this shot was a pain in the ass. It was a pain in the ass, you know, laying the track and shooting
and
it.
And lighting it, because
lighting
we didn't
it.
Have enough lights to
Absolutely.
Cover the whole thing.
Not only
so.
Enough lights to cover it, but you can't put lights where you'd like. Because
you
would
have like five lights, I think.
Well, yeah, because there's shadows everywhere. Yeah, I mean, it continued to be... Well, actually, editing it wasn't a pain in the ass, because you just drop it in, and it's like, there it is. But then when we had to redub the entire movie, and fortunately Don came out to do his voice, same thing again. It was a pain in the ass. You know, it just went on an eternity. And you don't really even see... There's a lot of cool stuff. There was like a cool "We Want You for the Zombie Squad" poster
right.
with the dead Uncle Sam.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that Spazzo zombie in the background.
Oh,
you don't even really
poster,
you
yeah.
don't even really see a lot of that stuff.
I think I might have drawn that poster too.
That was actually a local guy because it got stolen. Is all I remember. He was really pissed off because he had done it for us. We put it up in the office, and I was going to have set up a shot with one of the characters in it, and it just never happened. And then next thing you know, it was missing. So I don't think that was you, because I remember the guy being mad at me. It was stolen.
I did a poster for something. Maybe it was later.
You did a lot of... Yeah, there was a lot of stuff like that. And there's bits and pieces like this footage of the tongue that the film was lost. So this is actually from the original transfer, but it's been color timed to try and match with everything else. There's little fragments here and there in the new transfer, so... Here's another example.
We have all the Zombie Squad member just with his head so far up his butt, he doesn't realize his hand's about to get hit.
It's like, pay attention.
If I was a Zombie Squad member, that's how I would die. I would just be, you know, accidentally sit on the lap of a zombie or something. I'm working the blood here.
This shot always irritated me. It's so staged that he walks up and knocks that glass over. And we don't even see it break, so what's the point?
I know.
And you hear the sound
I'm
effect,
pumping that blood.
Well, it's one of those...
Old Faithful, isn't that what we say?
Yeah. It's just, you know, because that was a high shot, if you're going to have the blood there, it had to go high. It looks kind of silly now, I guess. But
but that's all part of the charm.
Yes.
If you didn't have that, then you'd miss it.
Exactly.
So this is going into a sequence that's one of only two scenes that were actually deleted from this movie, and there was a little bit of dialogue here establishing these characters as having some sort of romantic relations, which has been snipped right out of the middle of this, and it wasn't very interesting, so you're not missing anything.
Would that seem like the VHS I watched, that scene would have been in there?
No.
That's what I thought.
No,
I thought it was missing.
It was deleted years ago.
Yeah.
It is on this DVD, though. There's a deleted scenes and outtakes segment, and so you can see it. You can see
now,
why.
Where was this shot?
This was at Edwin Shaw Hospital.
Okay, yeah. This was at the hospital, too. I know that a lot of the other church cult stuff was...
That's the thing. I mean, we were talking about the Washington, D.C. stuff. Only those exterior shots were D.C. When they arrive at the Zombie Squad headquarters, that was Springfield Township, their fire, you know, and municipal building. Which is also here, which now looks nothing like this. They've completely torn it down and rebuilt it.
This was quite a night. It was fun.
Yeah, this was interesting because I decided the best way to cover this was just to have everybody get in there and do this, and then go in with two cameras and shoot
it. Was I operating a camera?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, I think you were.
Because that's all this was. It was just me and somebody else.
Melee, and, yeah.
Yeah. And a lot of the characters, I mean, Jolie's in here, Floyd's in here, John Kilo's in here, I mean, Scott Plummer's in here. Well, there's a lot of people in here that were in addition to.
We weren't really, a lot of the way we did things on a movie set today, that they'd have like safety meetings first and stunt people with experience.
No, we
had a lot of things just blowing up and people running around in very unsafe situations.
Playland Park is no longer there. It was not there even when we shot this, but it was a little amusement park where I used to go as a child, so that's why that scene is in there. But you're right. I look back now, and especially a few years ago, an actress that I'd worked with on another film had a really bad accident where her fingers were almost cut off on a set from a machete that was real. And it makes you look back over all the films that I've made and think, boy, you know, I've gotten awfully lucky. Because we really didn't, nobody got really seriously hurt on this movie.
No.
That I remember.
No.
And you look at all the crazy shit we were doing.
It's like, why didn't anybody get hurt?
It's quite a miracle that it didn't happen. And thank God that it didn't, because we were certain. I don't think we had insurance. I know we had to get insurance for that big day stuff when we shot in downtown Akron, but. Or maybe, no, not down. Maybe it wasn't the downtown.
We flew the airplane?
Yeah. I think we had to have insurance for that, which was an extra thing. But no, I mean, this was all by the seat of our pants.
This Bow House, we spent so much time in the house and on the property and place. I mean, just insane. And now it's like, I just have like a few memories, but it was, it seems like we were there 15 years, weren't we?
There was a lot. This was sort of the home base.
The shaky cam shot coming up, right, with the 2x4?
No, that was the very beginning.
Oh, that was the very beginning.
Yeah. Yeah, no, but we did spend, and refresh my memory, was that I remember there not being electricity at this location.
There wasn't.
We had little generators.
We ran power from the other house.
We did that too.
But I mean, you look at all this; it's a miracle that there's even anything exposed on film at all.
Well, that was another thing too. We could only use, I think it was two lights off of the one circuit that ran from the house, and we had the generator, and we had one more light, so we had like three lights.
It's crazy.
I remember the bad, like, 70s paintings of naked women that were hanging in this house. I don't think you really get a view of one. But
there's one behind you.
Yeah, really bad cheesy art.
Yeah, we didn't dress this that much. We kind of just let it go. But, yeah. Dr. Bo had bad taste in art. Is that what you're saying?
It's like, you know, Dr. Bo and Mr. Furley would have been kindred design spirits.
Yeah, there you see one. It was kind of freaky. You're right. And I don't think we never went, in the movie, we never went into that kitchen area, and there was another living room back there, which was our sort of a holding area.
Right.
Where the extras would get made up, and we would keep them. And this was another shot you'll see in the extras. We did this shot. We tested this shot out a number of times before we actually shot the movie. I don't know why. I think we were just working out that we had made this homemade dolly.
Yeah.
And
it was like a homemade dolly, didn't it?
Yeah.
It was like, yes, if you made a dolly of your own home, you'd expect it.
Well, I mean, I guess it actually did work ultimately, because you see it in the finished film, and some of the shots
catch 22 is, because everybody was so into doing this, nobody's ever been as into making a movie on any movie set I've been as everybody was into this one.
Oh, yeah.
This has never happened to me again in my life.
And the reason is because we had no experience. So you have the enthusiasm but not the experience, so it's sort of like, you know, this shot here, we wanted to smoke the set. You remember this?
Yes.
I do. You know, a lot of times they'll waft smoke in the room to give it sort of a diffusion of light. And we didn't have our smoke machine wasn't working, so was it me? Was it you, Talajko?
All of us.
Smoke cigarettes.
Well, we had those stupid insect foggers.
Yeah,
I hated those things.
And I think they came from the executive producer. I can't remember, but they were broken and barely working most of the time.
And the only fog juice they had for them was insect repellent.
Yeah. So when you use that inside, we're all going to get cancer from that. Or the cigarettes we smoked that day. We smoked like five packs each in a matter of 20 seconds.
Well, it's funny that you mentioned the enthusiasm over the experience, because I actually look back on all, you know, my so-called career, and it's like I always have done things the hard way. It's like there's an easy way and there's a hard way, and this was certainly an example of that, because some of the stuff, it was just simple logic and things you just didn't have experience enough to know better that you shouldn't be doing. So it was always beating your head against a brick wall until you broke a hole open in it, I guess, is sort of what it...
Well, I remember when I was being told that if I'd like it, I could be the first assistant director, and I was like, sure, what is an assistant director doing again? They got a call sheet. What the heck's a call sheet?
Which I'm surprised we even knew that much. But that's the thing. I had this great book, which is still published, called Independent Feature Film Production by Gregory Goodall. There's a plug for you. And that was like my Bible, because I bought that right before this movie, and basically all of my knowledge from, you know, I had made a lot of short films before this, but that didn't mean anything, was from that book.
Uh-huh. I remember that book.
And that was a fake licensing
that thing had a lot of
that actually said Dr. Bo.
The state of Ohio actually gave us
Dr.
Barnabas Bo, as a nod to Dark Shadows, which was a favorite of mine as the child. Yeah, that's right. And it's, of course, it's out of focus.
Right, so it doesn't matter. But when we were down in the
well, because it was an important shot.
We were in the fruit cellar down there. Didn't the ceiling catch fire that night?
Yes.
If it wasn't that night, it was another
light.
One.
We had a light up there.
Yeah.
And it caught on fire, yeah.
Well, the wood was so dry in this house, and those lights, those lights were I forget what they were called, but they got really hot, and it just caught the ceiling on fire.
Dude, that was a low DP light.
It's a wonder we didn't burn the entire property down.
That was our big light. I mean, Todd, that was the 1K.
You had the 2K that was inherited from the executive producer, which was also known as the shocker or whatever we called it. If it was slightly damp out, plug it in, you'd get a little surprise.
Yeah, it's a little surprise. I often go up to when I felt tired on those long days and just grab a hold of it.
Just grab that cable and go, yeah, now I'm ready to go another 3 hours.
I remember you cutting out the cardboard for that. I don't want to give away how these great piece of cardboard.
Like you can't tell with all the jitter. Actually, I think we did put that on a light stand or something.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe we...
Yes,
the jitter is probably the gate. The film gate is, it's Super 8, so small you don't get good registration. But, and here's a scene that was shot. How many times did we figure?
This is like six times.
It's got to be at least. Because we did a lot of pre-shoot test footage, both on VHS and then later on 3/4 inch.
Do we always shoot it right there, though?
And
at that location?
Always,
at that
always here, always at this location, and always the same way, which I look back on now and go, that was the wrong decision. I shot it six times and I didn't learn anything. I didn't learn that's not going to work. That's not going to cut together. So, I was never particularly happy with this scene. It's just... And this is like I said, every fragment you see, that's exactly what we shot.
Right.
There was no more footage of the actor saying any other lines than what you see here. Yeah. There's nothing to cut back to. This is exactly the way it was shot.
There's one funny shot at the end of this that was shot in the wintertime, a little insert shot.
Yes.
And it's a high shot looking down at the grass. And I think it was just the three of us and the actors that were there.
Yeah, there's footage on the behind the scenes of that,
yeah,
of us shooting that, yeah.
With hair dryers melting snow.
Yeah, that was much later in the shoot. That was probably some of the last stuff that was shot.
A year and a half later?
Yeah, probably. It was 1988, I think.
That was a long time we worked on that.
This was 4 years from start to finish, and then it was another year before it ever saw any sort of even, meager release.
The Bow Shed is what we called that place that
the
doctor just said, and that sort of became, instead of saying bullshit on set, we would go Bow Shed.
We had a lot of those, yeah. That actually, that shed was completely trashed inside, so that was actually a set.
Oh yeah, Floyd loved this.
Okay, when they fall on the ground, that's
the
time.
One. Yep, and we cut back to it again. I think he slugs him with his elbow. There it is. And I believe that was also missing footage.
You know, I've noticed these. You know, granted, he did just machete a guy's shoulder, but the Zombie Squad's a little bit trigger happy when it comes to shooting living people. They just, it's like, right, it's like we're about to see Pete Ferry, the Raimi character, shoot a man in the back. It's not a very tough thing to do.
Well, I mean, never mind the fact that doesn't he fire at him with a shotgun?
Yeah.
Which is like, for a long range shot, I don't know. I don't think he would have been getting up again, but fill him full of holes.
Those are real rocks, folks.
Yes.
Yeah, no, that was. He got dinged on that, that's for sure. I remember he came up and there was
spitting teeth.
Rocks in his face.
For the squibs, for the bullets, we had some book, maybe a Tom Savini book or something, that said how you would make them out of, condoms and gunpowder and all kind of stuff. And I remember once it was, I don't know if you were there, Jared, it was me, James Lonnie Edwards, Kelly Helmick, and we went in to get the condoms that we're going to need to... for the shoot. So we figured, okay, we have this many shots, blah, blah, blah. We'll need like 5 boxes of condoms. So we go into the store and there's only like 1 box. And we need non-lubricated. There was only like 1 box on the shelf that was lubricated.
Which makes you wonder who's buying all these non-lubricated condoms.
Yeah, we had to go to the counter and say we need 5 boxes of non-lubricated. And of course you feel kind of stupid and whatever. But so the person finds some in the back and they bring them to us. And it's like, okay, that'd be all, yes. Oh, wait, I say. We better get a couple more because we're going to have to practice. And everybody else is like, yeah, we're going to have to practice. And then it wasn't until we're out in the car later, it's like, why did that lady look at it so weird?
We're going to have to practice.
And we'll take a case of KY Jelly, too.
There's certainly no other use for condoms that the average person knows of.
But all that practice helps.
And here's where the acting goes to total hell when I'm on screen. I don't know what I was thinking. Well, I do know what I was thinking because I had cast this part of Lloyd several times and people kept bailing out, and I finally just said, the hell with it, I'll just play it myself. And there's Michael Todd in your zombie form.
Yes. Now, if anybody doesn't really get it by having seen the movie, that's the guy that broke in at the beginning into the house.
Yes. And, I think people figure that out.
I think they do. But
I was always worried that they wouldn't, but I think we beat it over there.
You mean that was the same guy?
The same character.
It has all the subtlety of a sledgehammer.
And we were, I remember when I got makeup for the first time, we decided to be accurate because, you know, if people defecate when they die, yeah. And we melted Snickers bars and rubbed it all over my butt. But you never see that anymore.
Yeah, it's that attention to detail.
Yes. As an actor, I needed that.
And I don't know what Bob Cochi as Reverend Jones has these sunglasses on his face, but even in 1986, I don't know what we were thinking.
If acting is in the eyes and he's covering his eyes,
yeah. That's sort of a meta. It's all in the eyes. That's what I'm all about. It's all the eyes. Now here's some stuff that never looked particularly great, but this footage, I guess, was just so underexposed. That,
I wonder why. Mike?
Well, it's just the way it is. It just is what it is.
It is what it is. I wish I know now.
This also, between the interior and exteriors and stunt shots that come up later, this whole whatever happens on this road, was
yes.
shot over 25 seasons.
Yeah. No, it literally was. There was spring, summer, winter, fall,
yeah,
and seasons.
Sometimes it's high, sometimes it's low, sometimes it's not there.
I think all this stuff was shot in the same day, but then when he comes back to the car later and the whole drag-along sequence, and some of it wasn't even at this location. I know towards the end, the last shot where the drag-along zombie...
That was right outside the office, right?
It was like down in the backyard, parking lot of Kmart or something.
Right,
we shot that
right, yes.
So this was, this is definitely like just hammering away at it till we got what we needed for them. I mean, we could have kept shooting this forever, probably, but... some point. You know,
I remember the voices dubbed, but we always got a big laugh from the real audio track of the guy that says, tells him to run.
Yeah.
What is the line he says?
Oh, yeah. A soldier, run.
A soldier, run.
Again, overstating the obvious.
But we were amused by that actor's delivery.
That's right.
Not that it was bad. It was just very emotionally heartfelt.
He was into it.
Yes.
We did this a lot, too, where... We're always shooting into the sun.
Isn't that your? Was that your sister that he just pushed away?
I don't think so. Oh. She does appear, but later in the as a cult member in the school.
The dog collar.
And of course, that thing about the muzzles being on the faces was obviously wound up on the box cover eventually. And it's funny, there was a film produced a few years ago called Children of the Living Dead that I was briefly involved with writing, rewriting the script, which did not get used, and thank God after seeing it. But when I went in originally to pitch my ideas, I had recycled this idea, and I remember the woman who had written the script saying, "That's the worst idea I've ever heard, having a muzzle on a zombie." And I'm thinking, well, what would you do?
If
zombies were real...
Right.
And would want to cover their mouths. And it's funny because years later I saw Silence of the Lambs.
Right.
And Hannibal Lecter has a muzzle on his face. And I'm thinking, well, okay, how dumb is that?
And, you know, I think the zombie squad should always have muzzles on them to put on the zombies so they don't accidentally put their hands in the zombie's
mouth. Yeah, exactly. As we've seen already. So it wasn't, there was some intelligence to that decision,
I guess. If I'm not mistaken, those muzzles are actually the little harnesses for walking a dog.
They are, and they were.
Screen door screen put on it.
That's right. That's right.
Hot
because we couldn't find anything better, so they were hot glued in.
Yeah. Hot glue was our best friend.
Hot glue and duct tape. Because we didn't
KY
have
jelly.
And didn't have gaffers. Yeah. Non-lubricated condoms.
Wasn't this wall sculpted from a potato, Mike? Didn't we have you do that?
It was, indeed. So was that window.
Now, Michael Todd.
Okay. This is my sister playing the victim here. And the reason she's in this movie is because she had been looking through some of the stills I took on set, and she saw Scott Plummer, this gentleman here. And she's like, oh, he's cute. I want to meet him. So I said, well, why don't you, come in and work on the movie and meet him? And so we got her to play the sacrifice victim. This is the night they met. They're now married with two beautiful children.
But so, there was another story here, too, the chanting.
They are chanting. And this was used in a film I wrote called Stop, You're Kill Me, also as a chant.
That's right.
They're chanting the word Muji Ketchumin, Muji Ketchumin, Muji Ketchumin. Now, what that means is, I was one day driving with Louise Leininger, our wardrobe girl, and we were talking about JR, and I said, it's all the mood you catch him in.
They were referring to that sometimes I can be a dick, and sometimes
right, sometimes
I can be a
total dick, and sometimes not. So it's the mood you catch him in, but I didn't separate the words. I said, it's the mood you catch him in. And she's like, what? The mood you catch him in. What? And when I finally explained, she goes, oh, I thought you were saying some weird foreign word that I had never heard. So Muji Ketchumin is now...
And somehow I heard that story, and it just amused me. I don't know.
So yes.
It's been down in the annals of history, as it were.
This is a shot that was shot much later, too, wasn't it, this scene?
Pieces of this were. Yeah. I think this stuff was pretty early on, but there's stuff in here, I think, with Scott Plummer's family. Some close-up shots of zombies eating. This stuff
is bad.
As you can tell, it's grainier. It's ektachrome instead of Kodachrome, if you recall. Because Kodachrome was like an ASA of 40, which meant it wasn't good for low light.
Yeah.
But it looked really good. And fortunately, most of the movie was shot with that.
And this
but
was
then,
shot way later. These are my hands. I'm under the...
That's right. This was shot in the basement of our so-called office. And you can't really see it. Unfortunately, that was another stupid decision on my part. When we got... It wasn't a rat. We got a gerbil. And, of course, we get a black one.
It's like, hey, Mike Delasco, shoot this black gerbil.
Their uniforms are black, too.
Yeah, exactly.
It's impossible to put enough light on those things.
What were we thinking? But these are the things you learn. This was actually the front window of our office, wasn't it?
I think, and I did put makeup on myself this day, if I'm not mistaken. I know I did a couple.
We would take a light reading if we had... exposure in one square foot of the whole frame. It was like, okay, shoot.
The first movie in Puppet Master 2 I was in that Mike Talachko worked on out here. And I was just so impressed with how he was running around that set tweaking every light.
Like he knew what he was doing. He didn't learn that from this movie.
It's like, where between Dead Next Door did you get this ability?
Robot Ninja, maybe.
No. Actually, that was more exposed than this one.
What, 16 millimeters?
Well, but see, again, and that's the... I mean, this movie suffered from it, too. It's like, you've set up this, like, the Bauhaus outside at night. Well, what were we thinking?
It's
like, you have five lights or whatever. You shouldn't shoot scenes like
our
that.
Our big light is the 1K, and we've got this big wide-angle epic night shot.
Hey, I saw this movie
and
the other day.
And we did it again in Robot Ninja. It's like, we don't have enough lights for this.
I saw a cheap horror movie the other day about vampires, and the whole thing was shot during the day. Because vampires were during the day. I was like, well, what are they doing? But, of course, they didn't have the money to shoot at night.
They learned a valuable lesson, I guess.
Yes.
So here
now,
comes the
here's another zombie
scene.
Squad member, though, that's just... What is he doing? I'm just going to fall asleep. He doesn't really...
There's a major continuity gap in the storyline here, because we see Raimi roll the window up, and then when he comes back, it's halfway down. But it was halfway down because... he shouldn't even have it all down as much as it is, but that was the only way we could get the hand...
Right.
In the window without, so, now what are you going to do?
When Kelly Helmicker is being dragged by the car and he's on the hood of the car,
right.
You see both of them, I believe it's Scott Plummer is the drag-along zombie.
I don't know if it was Scott or if it was Tony Redjick. I can't remember.
It was Tony Redjick, but that was Scott.
Oh, okay.
Go.
Oh, yeah, yes, you're right.
When Kelly Helmicker, God bless him, gets shot off the hood of the car...
Yeah, here it comes.
I'm surprised nobody was killed. The car's going about 20 miles an hour.
It is.
We have one mattress off of the side of this road.
And it's like
we're thinking we actually believe that when the squib goes off, we can tie it perfectly so it'll fall off the moving car onto this mattress. Which he missed the mattress, in case you're wondering.
Of course.
And
he hit the grassy area there, I guess.
No wonder he wasn't killed.
It's a wonder many people weren't killed. Because I know I was... notorious because I was usually the guy who would at least started the squibs and then I would make them and other people would execute them and pretty much everybody always got shot because they were plugged into the wall to be set off. I had these switch boxes and you get a little jolt. There's another Jack Daniels bottle appearance. You can't really see it, but when she opens that drawer, it's it's funny, looking back at this movie now, I didn't think much of it at the time, but there's actually a lot of like sort of political statement in this movie that I don't think was conscious on my part at the time.
When I watched it last night, I was noticing that. I want to know why, when he walked into this door, it's a very dark room. why was he just taking off his sunglasses from that even darker hall?
Yeah, because you might as well just flip them on. Can't see anything anyway.
In a dark...
Nice makeup, though.
In a dark hallway with... Dark
Barton did a good job with all the makeup.
Well, Barton did most of the good stuff, and then Bill Morrison did a lot of the stuff that was also pretty good, but then there was some other stuff that was just... It kind of was like hit or miss, some of the later stuff, you know.
When I was
you and I did some of the stuff.
Yeah. I like that Bane thing. I did that.
That's right. That's right. And actually, that always gets a good reaction from people, too. People are always bothered by that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And this actually coming up when he injects him starts a thing that I've done in numerous movies. I don't like needles.
Me either.
Or syringes at all. And I always do this thing where they raise their hand way up and then stab the syringe down into them. And it always gets a reaction from people, but it's at the same time, it's like, that doesn't even make any sense. The needle would break off into the arm.
It's like they're playing darts.
Exactly. Which is funny now because about a year and a half ago, my cat was diagnosed as a diabetic, so I have to give her insulin shots twice a day. So now I'm not putting the needle in myself, but I guess my fear of needles has been... There it is.
I was
like, what?
You know, I only read the script so many times and was there when we were being shot and drawing every shot like this and storyboards and everything. But I was surprised last night how much more of a bad guy Dr. Molson is than I always sort of remembered him just turning into a dick towards the end of the movie. Like,
no,
right
he's
there.
Pretty much. He's pretty
but
much.
Even through the whole thing, the way he talks to Savini at the beginning, he says something like, "Now get out of my sight, you make me nauseous," or something like that. It's like, that's not a nice thing to say.
No, he's very unlikable. That's the thing. I don't know if I know at this time I had an authority thing, like any sort of authority figure I just viewed as the enemy, I guess. And Dr. Molson was sort of, I don't know, that and medical science I didn't place a lot of faith in, and I just, that's weird. I don't know. When you're 18, 19, writing this stuff, it's, where does it come from? I don't know. Because I'm certainly more conscious.
Like you're so far asleep during this, because all night I was in the back of that.
It was a poor man's process. We had the lights going, and
you see some
people flagging off lights.
Behind the scenes footage of that on the disc too, to see the.
Oh, remember those false teeth too. See, Master Dude, it says on the
Master
wall.
Dude.
All kinds of, it says Romero is king, which is probably my own personal statement about Mr. George Romero. It's that wall was like, I think people were signing their autographs. It says "Hey Bud," it said "Peach Cobbler," which was an inside joke with Scott Plummer, and told everybody go in there and just put stuff on the wall. So
a funny story of Maria here. After Robot Ninja, I didn't see her for years and years and years and years, and I was living out here, and a friend of mine who I was going to be roommates with the following week, we were going to move in together. He was on a film. And he calls me up and he goes, this girl walks up to me and she goes, you from Ohio? I can tell by your accent. He goes, yeah, I am. And she goes, do you know Michael Todd? Which is like the stupidest question. You from Ohio? Do you know Michael Todd? He was like, yeah, we're going to be roommates. We're moving in next week.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
That's how you guys got back in touch.
That's how we got back in touch.
Now, what does she do these days?
There was my vein. So we were in touch. We were friends hanging out for a couple years and stuff. But then she got married and I haven't, I don't know where she is in the world.
But she still lives out here, you think?
I don't even know.
That
it was just so weird. You know Michael Todd?
There
you
go.
A lot of people from this movie are married now. Mr. Talachko is married, and Mr. Plummer is married, and Jolie is married now. And
where she live now?
She lives up somewhere Santa Barbara-ish.
Really?
That way, yeah. It's a little north of here.
Huh?
Yeah, no, she's definitely out here. I had lunch with her about 2 or 3 years ago, maybe longer. I don't know, lost track of time.
Oh, here's another...
Oh, this shot.
Trying to get enough light to...
I remember
you
setting
shot.
That up and, with the...
We sprayed his glasses with the dulling spray all the time.
There you go. That's some acting. And that was Spud's Cadillac. I don't remember what year it was.
Spud's Cadillac.
Here comes another Michael Todd role.
Yes.
As our homage to Chop Top, I guess.
Yes, I was Texas Chainsaw 2 crazy and... So we needed this character, so I...
And that wig was actually inherited from Scott Spiegel from Thou Shalt Not Kill Except.
Right, right.
That's the actual wig that Sam Raimi's character wears in that film.
Is that Manson-esque?
That's right. It's a little trivia.
Yes, this was a crazy night, but a fun night. And again, when that character dies, it's just, here I am standing over this white bucket that's just filled with explosive stuff, and how big is it going to be?
Explosive and flour, which is not something you want to have blown in your face.
And how big is the explosion going to be? We don't know.
There was never no way to tell, because that was the thing when we did that great explosion on the hill.
Yeah.
It turned out exactly like I would have hoped it would, but I didn't know when I was setting it up that it was going to be like that, because it was something I'd read in an old, it's called Super 8 Filmmaker magazine, and that's where I learned how to do those flat pack explosives. And basically it was just you make this little explosive charge with black gunpowder and pour flour over it, and the idea is the flour will burn.
Right.
But I've done it many times since on other films that I made back in Ohio, and sometimes you get a fireball and sometimes you just get a little poof.
You got them all in one shot.
This is some really improved footage here too, because this stuff was like, a lot of these night scenes were just green for no particular reason. That shot I remember just being green. It's like, what? And I don't know how many extras we had at any given time, or who knows how many nights this even was.
Yeah,
I did fix coming up here when they start lobbing grenades. There was always people always got on me about the cellar door
that it opens
a little too early. Now it's I fixed that.
Did you really?
A little extra cut.
This is again Scott Plummer as the zombie that I'm leading around here.
It's interesting that you've got your brother-in-law on a leash.
Yes.
Interesting.
Whoa, there we go.
There's some explosions.
Yeah, so here comes that's the shot that was added.
Oh, yeah.
I found a little snippet of an outtake where actually, if you look really closely, I'll blow it, but when the explosive comes out, you see the wire fly out.
There we go. My favorite shot of the movie.
There it is. That actually was a pretty big... Did you get hit in the face with any of that?
Because I had no idea if I was going to be dead and on fire 2 seconds later, a full body burn unintentionally, I had so much adrenaline going through me, I really don't know. I just remember that I said shit, and then next thing I know, I'm laying on the ground, and it's like, okay, I don't feel any pain, so.
You could have been covered in blood, and who would know?
Yeah.
Get them. Get them. Chase that car. It's like, okay.
And
here comes
Kelly Helmick.
In a porn wig.
In a porn wig.
We had boxes of those porn wigs.
Oh, I don't know where we got all this from.
We got boxes of them.
Didn't Susan Rockefeller or something?
Maybe so.
Track those down?
That's right. It was because she used to work where? At Higbee's or somewhere, right?
I mean, there was like 10 boxes filled with at least 10 wigs.
Now, is that the shot you're talking about where Scott Plummer now lives around
those
there?
Those two shots were on the Plummer estate.
Huh.
His family owned a big plot of land. We could actually drive the car through the trees there. Not that it was that wooded, and there was actually another, again, it was one of those cases where he had one of those flat pack explosives in front of the thing, and he had to time it so that it would go off just as the car came up to it, and I think I just cut it really closely because it didn't, I think the explosion goes off at a different time, but what are you going to do?
It's really kind of a good thing that the zombie squad gets thinned out now and then, because there's just not enough room for everybody. Like if Scott Siegel had lived during the first scene, driving back to Washington would have been for them.
Well, I can't even imagine. Six of them drove up from Washington, D.C. to Akron and that. And it was no luggage.
No luggage. Well, they don't need to change their clothes or, I guess, brush their teeth.
Yeah, they don't. That's right. Now we're back at Mogador High School. And side note, this school was actually where my parents both went to school and first met. My father was the basketball star, my mother was a cheerleader, so there you go, that's how this happened, although we did shoot a couple shots, pickups later, because they wouldn't let us come back to the school, we shot at Springfield High School, which is where I went to high school, so there you go, deviating, and it's funny, I showed this movie a couple weeks ago at a film fest in Canada, and somebody asked me in a Q&A thing afterwards about this guy's hair, with the mullet. And I was like, I don't think that mullet was in fashion in 1986, let alone now, but it does sort of date it. And here again, I mean, there's more of this religious subtext that...
Yeah.
I was really kind of surprised when I watched this movie again after not having seen it in so long, that I was like, boy, I really had issues with religion, I think.
Yeah, well, the whole religion and the government and the people.
Yeah, it's like, don't trust anybody.
Yeah.
Don't trust religion. Don't trust government.
And your hero's just shooting people in the back.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know why that was.
Why the moving around there? What happened?
It's the registration. Yeah. It was really difficult to keep it. The Super 8 film only has sprockets on one side, right. And in the gate it just wouldn't. That one is also pushed in. We pushed in because there was a... something, like a fogger or something down at the bottom of the frame that I was trying to crop out. So that makes it more noticeable.
A fogger that didn't work, so it
blows a shot. Damn it.
The only time they were ever used is but for blowing a shot.
And this is a scene I really wanted to reshoot, and unfortunately one of the actors who shall remain nameless refused to come back. Yeah, it wasn't Michael Todd. Michael Todd was willing to come back. But I had rewritten this whole sequence, and I think it would have been much cooler. I don't remember all the details of it, but at the time I remember thinking it would be cooler. And the executive producer was willing to give a few bucks to do it. That's actually a new shot that I just kind of cut into, where it's not just to change the length of the film, but just to, I found that little piece and said, hey, let's stick that in there.
You know what, surprisingly, and maybe it's because we did things in such short bits, but the screen direction is, for so many unexperienced people, usually they break that 180-degree rule
a lot more than
was done in this movie. I don't think anybody ever mentioned it on set, like, which way should I look, or did they, or, you know.
Well, I attribute that, I don't know if anybody remembers this, I had blocking maps, where I would make, like, an overhead view of the set,
that.
And I would sit and figure out, okay, the camera's going to be here, then it's going to be here, then. I think that's how I was able to, because that's a very common error. I mean, I've seen professional filmmakers make that
right,
mistake.
And then when you have things like when you have a lot of people in different parts of the room, you know, looking, talking like this, it can really get messed up easy. But this film, when I watched it again last night, I was like, you always have proper screen direction.
Yeah, so at least I have that going for it.
That should be on the cover of the DVD. Proper screen direction.
That's a big good title. Proper screen direction. Three thumbs up.
And those cult people sitting behind him, I don't know why I know that Sharon Merriman is one of them.
She was. That's funny because she was also in that scene in the Muji Ketchuman cult scene.
Okay.
Yeah, so that was supposed to be like the council of cult members or whatever, but it's never really established who they are.
This was awful. It would be like, taking out the makeup and putting on a different stage. Yeah. Oh, yeah. They had the smoker in the air. That was insect.
Yeah, the
fogger coming out,
and it was run through a plastic tube.
Yeah,
hooked to the. But you're not supposed to do.
No,
but it ran up, and it was a great effect.
And that yellow stuff that comes out, that was hair mousse because this was the '80s. So you have yellow hair.
I watched this. This is a new improvement here. The shotgun.
Oh, nice.
Much improved shotgun blast. Yeah, is that hair mousse? The yellow
hair mousse that they had on a tube that they would just squirt, and that stuff just went right in my eye. And don't get hair mousse in your eye; it hurts. But I couldn't wipe it off.
I wondered what that was. Of course, it's funny that all that elaborate work on that effect, and then it's blown the minute you put your arms up, because if you look closely, your arms are completely bare.
Yeah, I've noticed that. I had other things on my mind. Somebody should have said to me, don't put your arms up, Michael Todd.
Well, no, I mean, I think it was more a miscommunication between me and the makeup department, but this was a hell of a shoot.
Yeah, you can see the camera going.
What were we thinking? Yeah, because you're lighting this stretch of hallway.
Yeah, with three lights or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's ridiculous. They're running and they're shooting guns, and it's just like, I don't know what we were thinking.
Okay, this is why I can't even look. This drool,
is this about the spooge?
The drool on his mouth, whatever that white stuff is. Okay, because it doesn't even read, but I'm under
him. No, it reads.
No. What I'm going to say, I'm under him pumping blood from his shot, like through a syringe. So I'm right under him.
Oh, I didn't
and
even know that.
Between each take, he would go... to work up this spit. And I would be down there and it would be dripping on me. And it's this white, it doesn't look like spit. We know what it looks like. There's no reason for me to get into that. And this stuff from this man is dripping on me. And I just...
You have to work it up and lather
between takes and making those sounds.
Well, no, that's the thing. If I hadn't seen him cough that up, I would have thought it was something else. But he did it right there on set. It was not an effect. It was disturbing.
It was, and that's the one thing I just don't like looking at.
Now, this is actually the basement of Edmund Shaw Hospital, and this is a great location, which I actually went back years later and shot part of Ozone here. But it had these great, like, I don't know what they, I don't know what this thing was. It had these great, like, metal industrial doors that you could open and lock parts off, and it was a perfect place to.
Well, the rumor was, but I don't believe this at all, that's where they put tuberculosis patients back in the day. Like, they would just bring them all in there. But
I mean, it's possible because there were all these different little rooms and stuff, but I don't know. That's crazy if that's true.
Oh, see, what are you doing with your mouth? I can't even look at the screen. Gosh, that makes me so sick.
It just doesn't look like normal spit, folks.
No, it doesn't.
So here's the classic Romero homage where the zombies get let loose.
were all over the place. This is sort of neat, how, like, when he, well, I don't think it's right here, but when he gets torn apart, how it, like, flashes, and every time you come up, you know, he's more torn apart.
Yeah, I like the idea of the light going on and off, and that him watching on television. There was actually a short film I made in high school called, it was a music video to a song called Swingin' with a bunch of my friends, so there's a trivia for you. And this is kind of, I don't know why, this is a bad plot device, because they're going to go try and rescue him, and she's just going to go sit in the car. I don't know what kind of statement.
And not pay attention.
I don't know what kind of statement that makes for
women.
For women, but not a very strong character. And then he gets attacked, and I don't know. He just is like, keep going. I'll meet you outside.
Yeah.
He's like, okay.
In the space of 30 seconds, these characters have all split up. I don't know what sense that makes.
I like his makeup, too, a lot.
Yeah, that looked good. I think Michael Todd, do you remember this? I think we tried to create some sort of mechanical hand to show that him ripping it off.
But I was thinking that last night when I watched it.
I didn't see any of that footage, so we must never have shot it.
We didn't.
When I went through all this stuff, but I know we were working on it. And the other one was, there's footage that you shot, actually, of me working on Commander Carpenter's head. Remember, we were going to make this big elaborate head that gets ripped open. And gets killed.
This is Scott Plummer as Mercer stand-in on the long, long shot.
That's right, because Scott Plummer was the stand-in to the stars.
Yes.
Was his credit, because he stood in for everybody.
But I was wondering that Carpenter thing last night. I was wondering, how does he die again? Because I know we had planned something that we didn't shoot. We had brown wax head, honey wax, whatever you call it.
We cast his head, and we sculpted it, and it was supposed to be this big mechanical thing where the zombies reach into his mouth
and pull
the
top,
top of his head off.
Yeah.
And we never finished it. I don't even think it ever got to like the point where he had a foam latex version of it. Or there's the shot you were talking about where you see those flashes of guts. It's kind of more effective that way. And lots of extras. I think there were the count I remember was there were at least 1,500 people from Northeast Ohio that played extras in those movies, because when they would call in to sign up, Tina would put them on an index card. And so I still have all that stuff stored at my mother's house back in Ohio in the attic. But all their names and addresses, phone numbers, and all that stuff. And when we counted them up, there were 1,500 of them, which is pretty impressive.
And since so many came back time after time after time.
Yeah, it was hard to find places to put everybody.
Yeah.
That's actually my sister's head. She's one of the cult members in this scene. This is the basement of Mogador High School. Some of the stuff was shot.
Plummer
in
again.
Maine.
Was Plummer in there?
Yeah.
Plummer, we need you here.
Yeah, sadly, we had to do this in Los Angeles on a deadline to make the release date. So we had to whip this together.
It's Easter Sunday, by the way.
That's right. This is how we're spending our Easter. There's an idea in here that never really was fully realized, that when Mercer, who's now a human zombie, is what we called him, when he gets shot, he's supposed to bleed black and white. You kind of only see the white, because again, it goes back to that thing about, why would you have black on black? That's not going to register. These are the common sense things that you don't realize. But I think you can see when he spits up the black, but...
You know, it's this character that Pete Curry's playing, he lets go pretty easily. It's like at the beginning, Scott Spiegel's like, no, leave me here. He's like, okay. And then
he doesn't really care.
Do you want some help, Mercer? No, I'm okay. Okay, that's fine. I'll leave you. Dr. Bolson's getting attacked. You go back to the car. Okay.
Okay, see you later.
He's
not really trying very hard.
Limited perspective.
I don't know what I was thinking here.
You had probably seen a commercial.
It seemed like
this whole close-up of mouse talking during commercials.
He's probably good, the bad, and the ugly.
Well, you know, the funny thing is we shot those scenes on this day, and then we had to go back and reshoot all those shots of the mouse because they were out of focus or whatever. And so it's like I had the chance to even think again of a better way to cover it, and I still did it the same way. So live and learn. There was also a shot of Jolie I found reacting that I wasn't paying attention, but where Anna decides that she's going to shoot her, and it cuts back to Jolie one last time, which was not in the original version of the film. Minor changes.
Here he is yelling at Savini.
Yeah, he's going to get his comeuppance, as it were. Yeah, I mean, I look at this. Look at all that.
Oh, yeah.
blood, and we just, everywhere we went, we just trashed.
We trashed
everywhere.
That high school, and I still don't think some of that's in the walls there.
It's got to be. There's no, because some of that, the like the brick back there, I mean, that it gets in that.
Forest.
Yeah, there's no way. I mean, the brick itself you could clean off, but here's the Commander Carpenter death scene. And more blood on the floor. So, yeah, originally he was supposed to get drug in here, and then it was supposed to cut to a shot of this cool fake head being ripped in half. But alas, it did not happen. But we've seen everyone else get ripped limb from limb, so I guess to not see a character get torn up is, it's okay. You don't need to. And I think they talk here about, there's a mention to some component of this serum called Gular.
Yes.
Which is not a real...
Yeah, Gular.
Big surprise, it's not a real word. I have no idea where that came from.
Sounds like some kind of Russian meat and noodles.
Yeah, I don't... Gular, it's like, I have no idea. These things just occur to me. It's always funny, too, here, they're banging on this door, and then he just opens it. He's like, oh, it's unlocked. No, he's like, it's not supposed to be locked, but the door went the wrong way. It opened out instead of... opening in, so...
See, in a real movie, they'd have an art department that would take the door off, put the hinges on the other side and everything. And,
exactly.
You know.
But I think we damaged this place enough.
Yes.
Well, yeah.
Added a little gun flare to that gunshot as well. Now, this I always liked, this whole subplot where he locks himself in this cage. I mean, it's so campy, but it kind of fits... His demise fits his character, I think. It's sort of like... You know, he gets cornered, the way he gets cornered and killed, anyways.
Knock it off, bastards! Stop it!
And then he's gonna saw his
cage.
No, that's the thing. It's like, in reality, this many people, they can just press against that cage.
Oh, yeah, well, anybody on set, if they leaned against it, it would fall apart.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing, yeah, because every time you would touch it, it would just waver.
You built this cage, right, Mike?
Probably.
I don't know if it was you. It might have been Plummer, because Plummer was the guy that was the carpenter dude. I mean, he always had to...
But I think it was built before Scott.
Really?
No, that was built there on the set, right. It was those other cages, those metal cages.
Yeah, the judges actually had metal bars.
Right.
But those were even more rickety.
Yeah.
I think when you filled them up with like 5 or 6 people crammed into them.
Scott Plummer is a zombie again.
And, yeah, that's right. And here's, this is Phony Rain. We got in trouble for this, too. We took the fire hoses out of the school, and they were like high-pressure hoses. I think there were 2 of them. And we aimed them at the sky and just let the rain fall.
So you can fall, it's falling 2 different
directions. Yeah, exactly. There it doesn't work so well.
Yeah.
But,
we had to backlight it, too.
Yep. So it
by that time, we had figured out that we needed to backlight things.
There's also the sun's out. You can see the sun.
This effect works good because that's sticking in there. That's just a block of styrofoam laying next to Scott Plummer's head that the machete went in. But it actually worked.
But that, yes. The machete, though, was awful sharp.
Yes, it was.
Well, it's behind his head. Yeah, it's not so.
Yeah, but we're just pointing it at Scott's head.
Of course, that, you know, it really wouldn't kill that zombie, but... So here he's going to meet his big demise. This, I actually think, is one of the most improved scenes in this new transfer, because some of this, like that shot, used to be green, and some of this was so dark you couldn't see it. It looks really pretty nasty now, I think. It's definitely a major, major improvement. And I don't know what this whole business about him pulling the tongue out and taking his hat. And it's like the guy's getting torn limb from limb, and all he's worried about is, give me back my hat. It's like, well, this is the dialogue of a 19-year-old. That's all I can tell you. But he's gonna get it good now. That's actually Bill Morrison in the foreground there. That's shirtless of that zombie. David Barton's over there to the right corner. There were 2 makeup guys. They knew the effects, so we let them be the ones to crack it open.
And Mercer seems pretty proud to have the hat.
Yeah, he's gonna, you know, in the sequel he's gonna be
fun.
Walking around. No, that's a joke. That's silly. In the Dead Next Door 1.5, maybe we'll have that. And more fake rain. That actually was shot, I believe, at Tina Gill's driveway with just a regular garden hose. This shot was.
A blood effect here when he bites into his tongue.
Yeah, there was a tube running up through that thing, I think, and it's a nice spray.
Yeah.
It was a gelatin tongue, so he could bite it. I don't know why we shot so many fragments of things. I don't know if it's that were we missing shots? Was nobody paying attention? Or so we would shoot, it seemed like an endless amount of time at one location, and then we would go back later, and I don't know if it was weird. Because that's obviously you need those shots of them reacting to him.
Right. Why didn't we get him there?
I don't know what we were thinking.
I don't know, but it still looked like we only had one light.
Well, I don't think we didn't accumulate any lights over the course of the thing. I think it was
more bulbs would burn out that we couldn't replace.
Exactly,
so
that's more likely. So now we're coming to one of the two finales here, and Raimi is now a human zombie himself.
I love his line. Well, did the serum work on you? Well, look at it.
Yeah, well,
that's the character is an idiot.
There you go.
He's got light on his face, though.
Yeah, no, it's lit. It is lit.
I think we shot this late last, right? Or
no, because this, I mean,
this was right at the end.
On a regular movie, this should have been shot at the same time, but we probably did come back later.
We did come back.
Maybe that was a location they didn't kick us out of. And this was a, I think this was an afterthought. I don't think this was in the original script.
I think it was.
Oh.
There were storyboards for that.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes, as a matter of fact, it's one of the reasons I wanted to work on the project.
Well, I always like that shot because a plane was landing at the same time, but you can't really see it. But
yeah, we had a lot of extras that day, too.
That was, I don't know if that was the same big, that wasn't the same big day, that was another day, but that was right by that airstrip.
These credits do read a lot better than the red.
Yeah, the cheesy 80s graphics. Well, that was the thing, and people told me, oh, you know, red, that's a bad color for NTSC video, it bleeds, and so I just did it anyway. and then you learn that, you know, it's a nice, classy, white title. It somehow looks okay. You can just get away with it. So, yeah, this is a sort of...
Mike Grossi, vibe. Has anybody heard from him?
No. I think Scott Plummer ran into him a few years ago, and he was selling real estate or something. Which I think is what he may have been doing back when we shot this movie, so maybe he's still doing the same thing. Yeah, it's a lot of people, I mean, Bob Kokai, there's a short film that was shot in Cleveland by a filmmaker. I was at a convention last fall.
Oh, yeah, you're not doing the take two on this? Like,
no, nah. And Bob was actually in it, in the short, so I was watching him going, that guy looks kind of familiar. He doesn't look quite the same anymore. And I saw the end credits, I was like, Robert Kokai? I know him.
He's got some stuff coming out of his mouth.
And he still had it. It's just a joke. John Kilo, of course, went on to write and direct Skinned Alive, which is a film we made a few years after this one. Scott Spiegel, of course, went on to do Intruder and From Dusk Till Dawn 2 and co-write Evil Dead 2 and just did Modesty Blaze a while back. And Jeff Welch still was in the music business, that you couldn't tell from the mullet.
Still has the same haircut.
Actually, he does not have the same haircut. But Michael Todd, what have you been up to?
Not much. Selling oranges on the freeway.
that's
Wait,
popular.
Look at a dead bottle of whiskey saying one day something good will happen. I'll open you.
The same bottle 20 years later. And Jennifer Mullen appeared in a few films. Robot Ninja, Skinned Alive. After this, Joe Wedlake, I don't know what Joe's up to, unfortunately. I tried to get in touch with him to do an interview with him about 5 years ago when I was collecting the interviews for the featurette, but we could not make it work. Lester Clark, as I mentioned, died in a car accident a couple years ago. He was also in Skinned Alive. Mike Talashko. Is Mr. Big Time working on a lot of... Look for his name in credits of major features everywhere. Barbara Gay / Katz Norod. Actually, I worked with Barb as recently as 2 or 3 years ago in a film called Dead and Rotting, which I produced for Full Moon. And Bill Morris is still working on haunted houses and occasionally doing some effects stuff. Don't know what happened to Jerry. I haven't kept in touch with Jerry or Emilio, so I don't know.
Did Jerry do crew work on this too, or was he just...
He drove extras around.
Yeah, he drove extras around. Yeah.
I was thinking that last night. Like, I know he was on set more than just the short time that we shot that.
Do you have any picture of Kelly without makeup?
In the behind the scenes there is, but not...
fake head.
Yeah, there he is, with and without the head. And Matt Patrick is a... a radio personality in Akron, Ohio, who we shot shot him in the movie and then proceeded to dub his voice. Whatever sense that made. So there you go. I don't know. And here's our new improved end credits, which is more traditional.
That
end crawl.
Yes.
And it's a little shorter. The running time is
Chris Bryding. We didn't mention him.
Chris the Rock.
Chris the Rock. That kid worked so hard and did the stupid job that we couldn't get anybody to do. Like when we had an explosion underneath that door.
Yeah, he was the one that
we needed someone to stand next to it with a piece of wood to knock the door up because this explosion is going to go off in this enclosed space with you. He did it.
Yeah.
I remember he came out. He took off his safety goggles and he was just like white from the flower.
Yeah,
except for where the glasses were.
Yeah.
It's like a cartoon.
Like how did it look?
Chris Bryding, exactly. Wherever you are. If you're watching this, your work was greatly appreciated.
And there's some bits of in the outtakes. There was a lot of footage, like of us just screwing off at the end of film reels or whatever. And Chris is in there quite a bit.
What's that?
In the outtakes.
Oh, okay.
Segment. There's a lot of just like random footage of us goofing off, and you know, with the stuff that would be at the end of the film reel or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Robert Hudson, camera operator.
You talked to him. You said a couple years ago?
Yeah, a couple years ago. He lived up in Washington.
Down at the spa.
Bob, the classic Bob Hudson story, when we were originally going to shoot this on video, and he was a video guy, which is why we hired him. And then we said, well, Bob, we're going to shoot on Super 8. What do you think about that? He goes, well, I think it's shitty.
Yeah, remember that?
But he was a good sport, and he stuck with it, and... I think him and I shot, I mean, certainly the bulk of his movie, for sure. I mean, I think Mike probably ran some camera on it, too. But
yeah, fairly. I was running lights around.
Oh, I want to tell the story of Palasco, how he scarred me for life. When we were shooting this, first film I've ever been on, usually on the set when someone's about to turn a light on, they'll say, watch your eyes, so you know not to stare into it. Palasco, he goes, hey, Todd. And I would look over, and he would turn the light on right in my eyes. And then still to this day, when I'm on a set, and I hear, watch your eyes, I look at the light. I can't help it. So I was scarred for life.
There was a lot of that sort of stuff where we were just pick on each other. It's like picking on a scab. It's just like...
And just doing the wrong thing. For no reason.
But, you know, John Keela points it out in the making of thing. It's like, we were all very young, and I don't think... You know, a lot of us had not been that experienced in the world, so it was just...
Yeah.
We were sort of learning who we were or whatever. I mean, it was just kind of getting through this thing. And under the worst of conditions, because it really was like, you know, wartime conditions sometimes with the lack of sleep and just being there all the time and not even knowing what you were doing half the time.
Right.
Yeah. But it's... Now it's kind of a hoot to look back 20 years at this crazy thing and see what we did.
Yeah, I think we weren't smart enough to know that we... Couldn't do it,
exactly.
Yeah, we were. When that's just it, we weren't going to take no for an answer.
Back in time to us on the set.
and
here are the three wise men.
Slap ourselves in the head.
And JR. They're going to stop you.
We're from the future. You need to listen to us.
Yeah.
Someday people are actually going to see this stupid thing.
Yes. Yeah, WorldCom stock, don't buy it.
So, yeah, there you
that's
go.
It.
Anybody have any parting shots here as this rolls down?
Thanks for watching, everybody. Thanks for having me do the commentary, JR. And it's so great to see you again, Michael Palasco.
Oh, yes. You too, Todd and JR. And
well, thanks to you guys. I mean, you were two of you know, probably a handful of core people that were really with this thing in the trenches.
Well, I'm glad
I
could make it over, that's for sure.
And we have not seen each other all that much in the last, you know, 10 years at least since I've been living in Los Angeles. And, And it's good to come back together under this sort of conditions, under knowing better and...
Oh, just so it's... Do I get a copy of the DVD when it comes out?
Of course.
Okay. That's on tape.
Everyone gets a copy. So that's it. Thanks for watching.
Bye-bye.